right, everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of Guitar Talk right here from Guitar Talk Studio outside of Chicago, Illinois. Man, whoo, snowing, raining, cold as hell, but it is winter. So what the? We got a great show in store for you. But before we get into the show, I want to show you this. Have you seen this yet? You know, it's that same one right there. This is by Burt Guitars. This is my signature model Telecaster. It's got bare knuckles. It's got a P90 at the neck, humbucker at the bridge, three-way toggle, hip shot. It's got Spurzel tuning pegs. It's got Wilkinson roller nut, swamp ash, roasted swamp ash with a roasted maple neck. This is an amazing guitar, man. Custom made, hand built in Indianapolis by Joe Burke of Burke Guitars. $1,200. Can't go wrong, man. If you're looking for something that is a beast, something that is, you know, it's a plank, right? It's a friggin' telly. It's a plank. It's a great guitar. It is a workhorse, stays in tune, sounds amazing. Nice contoured body on the back. It's absolutely beautiful. Somebody said to me one time, it looks like my grandma's kitchen table. I'm going to tell you, his grandma's got one hell of a nice kitchen table because this is a really great guitar. Anyway, I thought I'd show it off. You can go to BurkGuitars.com or it's BurkGuitarsUSA.com. You can find Joe Burke on social media. Check it out. You go to any of my accounts and you can see this guitar, learn more about this guitar. It is absolutely amazing. And where the hell are you going to go get a handmade, custom built in the United States guitar for $1,200 or less? It's hard to find. Great guitar. Joe Burke will be at the Illinois Guitar and Gear Expo, which is the buy-sell trade show that Guitar Talk puts on. That's about an hour south of Chicago in Kankakee, Illinois, at the Kankakee County Fairgrounds. That's Sunday, March 10th is going to be the date of the show. You can come out and you can meet some friends of mine, like Andy Timmons is going to be there. Hopefully Greg Martin from the Kentucky Hunters will be there. Chuck Wentler, formerly of Blacktop Mojo, will be there. A lot of great dealers, a lot of great builders, guys that build pickups and amps. And we've got some drum guys, custom drum guys, some staging people, a lot of really cool stuff going on. So you want to come out and you want to check out the Jimmy Warren signature Burke Telecaster. It's a great guitar. And we might even give one away, you know, raffle one off or something like that for Guitars for Vets. We got a great show in store for you today. Now, this cat's been around a long time. He's put out, I think, around 11 albums. He just put out a new album called Midnight Junction that hit in the top 10 on the Billboard charts for blues rock. Eric Sardinas has been with, you know, Mascot Records and a lot of other labels over the years. He's toured the world over and over again. He's doing shows right now in California and about to spread out throughout the country. He's my guest tonight. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. You know, he's had a hiatus. He's been off for a few years and now he's back with a vengeance, man. It's great, great album, great sound, great playing. Everything about it is really focused. And, you know, I love the whole, you know, blues dobro thing, especially when you just rock the shit out of it. Now, he's done some really cool things in the past, you know, like I've seen him, you know, he was on some tours with Steve Vai. I've seen him on stage with Steve Vai and Uli Roth, and oh my God, he's hung with the best of the best. And so we had an opportunity to sit down a while back to talk about his new album and everything that's going on. I think you're really going to enjoy it because he's about to embark on a series of shows, and this is the perfect timing for this. You want to get his album, you want to check it out, all that good stuff. So do yourself a favor, sit down, you know, put your feet up, get a cool beverage. Again, that's what I do. That's what I do. And enjoy this conversation with the one and only Eric Sardinas.
Oh, no, I appreciate you. How you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good.
How's the weather?
It's cooler, thank God.
I wish I could say the same.
Yeah? Are you in the South?
No, I'm in Vegas right now.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's 106 today.
Oh, wow, man.
It's hot. Had a
Brutal.
gazelle cut through my yard the other
Yeah, it's like the
So,
Serengeti there, huh? That's cool.
a little bit, yeah, feels like it.
So man, I've kind of followed your career on and off for a while. You've been around for a good time, and I noticed you got a new single out now called Long Shot.
Yes,
But
sir.
it's been a while. I think it was at 14 when you put out, it was, am I correct? Was it 14 when you put out your last album, or?
I thought you were meaning my age. I was like, I think my
Yeah.
first one was
Yeah.
Boomerang, I believe was the last. That was we toured on Boomerang for about 3 3.5 years plus. So
Yeah.
that was turning into an Appetite for Destruction kind of thing. It's one album and 6 years of touring. It just it we were due for a new record, and long overdue. But the pandemic, so to speak, stopped a lot of things in its track. So touring stopped. The release, I really didn't want to release a record without being able to tour. That's the big thrust of it. But I kept myself busy, just making music. Being off the road, for that time was tough. But all that.
Yeah. Well, I think so many people went through that decision-making process of, do I release something or do I not? Because there were so many people that had an album or were in the middle of an album or whatever and just weren't able to get it out because, like you said, I mean, what good does it do to release it and not be able to support it? So you got this
Yeah,
single
I mean
out.
it.
Go
Go ahead.
ahead. No, go
No, no,
ahead.
no. No, I agree. It was a little bit of that. It was a little bit of that. But, there was with the length of time that things took to start getting back into mode. I just utilized the time. So when you say the year is going by, yeah, absolutely a long time since the latest release. But we were on the road, for quite a while
Yeah.
to support that album. But yeah, the touring stopped, and time flies. That's no joke. So it does feel a little bit like yesterday that I put out that record, but not really. It's been a while. So
Right.
I got lots of music, but it's looking forward to getting back on the road and dropping the hammer.
Yeah, when's that going to take place? Do you have any idea when you're going to be back out there?
Yeah, well, the album's coming out on October 13th. I'd like to say at midnight because it's Midnight Junction, the name of the record, but not that slick. Not that slick. We'll get back on the road soon around that point. Just in studio, just playing, rehearsing, just getting material, new material. I already got a couple more records in the bank in my mind. I just need to, yeah, I'm already ready for another one. So I'm in a hurry to get back on the road and support this one.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. It's having not been on the road for a while, I can imagine that, how excited you are to get back. Let me, if you don't mind, I want to talk about your guitar playing and your guitars for a little while.
Sure.
In that, I find it fascinating, of course, that your instrument of choice is a dobro, and I'm just curious as to, because I don't know why. And I didn't want to look it up. I wanted to ask you personally, why is it that that's the instrument of choice for you? I mean, of course you could probably play anything. Is it because it's what you love? Is it because nobody else is really out there doing it and you stand out from everybody else? I mean, what's the reason for falling into a dobro rather than picking up a Les Paul or a Strat?
Well, can you see me playing Les Paul on a Strat? Maybe you can, but no. You see what
Well,
I'm saying? Yeah, I growing up, I was always, I never took lessons, so I always playing, picking up the guitar, being left-handed, and being corrected constantly. I technically play backwards for a lefty because I play right-handed, so I
Right.
puts my left hand on the neck. But the feeling of always having a hollow body was something that I was always connected with. And my love for the acoustic side of, Delta Piedmont country blues, Texas blues, the early, from the Delta Titans to all the names you can run through, and all the ones you can't. I really was exposed to music, grew up with it, picked up slide at an early age, but the resonator itself was a sound that I really connected with because I just love that trash can sound, and I like that warmth that it can give, and just the emotional content with slide in general. And there's a lot of primal, a lot of human condition in it, and it's very organic the way I feel about the resonators. Now, electrifying them was a choice that again organically happened. Because sitting down in front of a band just was not working for me. So eventually, once I started figuring out how I could push my guitars with no limitations, and whatever limitations they gave me, I found, through my endless playing that basically there's nothing that I can't figure a way around. They're not meant to be pushed to the levels that I do, because it's not what they were made for originally. But in my mind, I'm still playing like a single player. I like to emulate or feel the connection with the, like we were talking about just a while ago, the blues, the early blues, what I was inspired from and with. I incorporate that, respecting the tradition of it, of that instrument. It's almost metaphorical, and taking it and blurring the lines between the tradition and myself as a player, and where I go with the blues. Because to me, I'm always playing blues, but as you know, I like to shine that part of me, and I hope, and I think it permeates all my heavier rock stuff,
Yeah.
music as well. And so that was just a natural metamorphosis, if you will. I just once I started, and I knew that that guitar was that became my Les Paul or my Stratocaster. So I am the one that does stand out that way, because nobody was no one does it like that.
Yeah, there's nobody else out there really doing what you do, you know.
I see them once in a while. They're out there. They're out there.
Yeah,
But,
well, they are, but I'm just saying it's not as wide or as varied as, you know, the electric guitar, you know, as the Paul or the whatever, you know, the
oh,
Strat or
yeah.
whatever. You know, everybody leans towards that. You know, I find it that, you know, it's a completely different mindset to play that style of an instrument versus, you know, a regular electric guitar in that. So, I mean, is this something that, like, from the early age that you did, or was there a time in the early, you know, development part of, you know, developing Eric into a guitarist? Was there a time that you used something else, or has this always been it?
Well, no, I had guitars when I was when I my first guitar was a that wasn't a toy, was a Hondo Classical Junior guitar. I don't know where it came from, but nylon strings, and that was something I was twanging on. And as far as the electric side, that was when I was about 6 to 7, and then I think I got a steel string guitar, acoustic, and I had a Les Paul, when I was younger. And really, when it came to electric guitars, though, I think really what turned me on electric guitar wise, that had that kind of the chronic feel for me, and the energy was really turned me on, and still do. The early like Harmony Rockets, like the single file volume, volume and tone, just it looked obnoxiously cool. Yeah, it's that Sears and Roebuck shining through, So, yeah. So I always, again, I always had a hollow body, and when I got a resonator, I was probably about 12, and at that point, I wasn't really thinking about electrifying it because I was really, really submerged in listening to the blues and listening to all that inspired me, and always just having music around me in general. But as far as pushing the guitar into the electric sound, that becoming one really was the swan song of my thinking, so to speak. It really kind of culminated into, I'm gonna get out the tools, and I'm gonna put this pickup in here, and I'm gonna figure this out. And I have more than you can shake a stick at as far as resonators go, but I the there's the really old ones, the ones that I have from the 20s and 30s. Of course, I don't damage those. I consider that sacred ground with those older guitars. But like Chris Whitley, for example, I mean, we're good friends, and like I really loved what he did with his steels, and he had his own approach at electrifying his as well. And when I play live, I use the wood body resonators as opposed to the steel, unless I'm breaking down and doing some acoustic stuff, then I'll break that out. Different tones, different charge.
So what did you do, Eric? I mean, when you're young and you're, kind of developing yourself as a player, what are some of the things that you did that made you a strong guitarist on the resonator? I mean, what are some of the things that you did that helped propel you to where you are right now as a player?
Well, I basically learned from ear, just by ear, and I never took lessons. I just adapted. So when I think that in itself, that approach to guitar and be basically playing backwards for myself, because it was corrected enough in my hands that just like those green-handed scissors, green-handled scissors. Those are right-handed scissors with green handles. So I use right-handed scissors. I play, that way, but I think it contributed to my technique maybe a little bit. Also, the overall approach to the guitar of not really having any conscious way of playing, just hearing and wanting to figure out how to do it, from tuning my guitars to a song to figuring it out, was exploratory. And by doing that, I think that by figuring things out, you become you do I do a lot of unorthodox things, and because that's the way it worked and that's the way I felt it was played. And if it wasn't, I could play it that way. And it just makes no sense sometimes to another player when I just wasn't aware there was a scale there. I just but you kind of study your guitar, and you learn more about that, your instrument, by subconsciously you're teaching yourself all kinds of different layers of getting associated with, becoming connected with the guitar anyway. That's the way it worked for me.
It
And just
seems,
being, go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems like though a lot of players that I've talked to that have had a similar approach, or similar, you know, background is what you're talking about, in that they, a lot of them do have some different approaches to whatever it might be, whether it's how they hold a pick or how they pick or whatever it is, simply because it's unconventional and it was what was natural to them. But a lot of times those things turn out to be the things that really, as a player, set you apart from everybody else.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Sure, a lot of that. A lot of that.
Yeah, you know, and so I think as a player, you know, exploring the instrument and exploring different approaches to the instrument, as opposed to trying to play like somebody or trying to get something like somebody else is doing, you know, really helps to make, you know, you into an original, you know, player, as opposed to, well, you know, he can sound like anybody he wants, because you're an original player. You know, it's, you can definitely hear the influences, you know, from your past. I mean, the influences that you've had, but at the same time, you're unique because, you know, you do something in a way that a lot of people, you know, don't do it. And so, you know, it's been a benefit to you, hasn't it?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I know there's a lot of uniqueness in that, but yeah, I think, you know, just the, you know, moving the music forward and knowing your roots. I mean, there's not one player that doesn't stand on the shoulders of their inspiration and the music that inspired them. You know, having music pretty much of saturating my soul at all times. I have all those souls swimming around inside of me. But, you know, as a guitar player, you always need to find your own voice, because it is the complexity within simplicity. And I'm not implying it's a simplicity in my playing, but whether it's meat and potatoes or, you know, turning it upside down, it's a voice, and it's a connection that's very powerful. And when you have that, when you find your tone, all that inspiration, and when your sound, your voice, and you make that connection, that's really what emulates and really turns me on, you know, as a player, and hearing other players, you know, moving the music forward and sounding like no one else, but you know that they do, because they feel it, man, it's in there. It's part of it. It's like, no matter what, you got traits of your parents. You know what I mean? You're gonna sound like them here and there. You know, you're gonna look like them here. You know, you only got two hands and one face. You know, but you know, no heart's the same. So it's how you do it and what you do with it. You know, for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think that uniqueness of just being, you know, when I say uniqueness, I mean just, you know, having an individual approach, you know, an individual statement of who you are as an artist and as a player is the thing that draws people, you know, to you or to other players in that, because, you know, like I say, you know, when was the point though for you that you said, okay, you know, this is my sound, this is my style?
I knew that early on. I knew that early on, because in my right mind, no pun intended, I knew I was never going to be playing a solid body guitar. And I very much wanted to, you know, with the blues roots and the angst of pushing my band into the blues rock situation, I really knew that that was my call. No matter what, I knew that that resonated, and I had a story to tell, and we were going to make the myth. And that really, to me, was, with all the bars and all the nightclubs and coffee houses and crappy little gigs that I'd play and street corners I played, taking it and moving it and shifting gears, I could feel it. And I could feel that I, no matter what that guitar can and can't do, it's going to do it with me. And it was my Stratocaster. It was my, you know, my Les Paul, if you will. You know, it was my it was an extension of me. So yeah, and that was early on, man. That was, you know, when I was sneaking into clubs to play, because I was 21.
Right.
Right.
You know, those days, though, man, it's like you almost feel really sorry to some degree for a band or an artist that's, you know, just trying to make it today, because it's so much, so weirder. I mean, it's so much more difficult. I mean, at least it seems that way to me. It's so much more difficult today than it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, to start.
I agree.
Start the ball rolling. I remember, you know, just to give you, for instance, you know, I'm from the Chicago area, and I started playing with, sitting in with Sun Seals and Otis Rush and Junior Wells and all them cats and stuff. And I remember that during those days, those guys would pay attention to you, right? They would invest in you. They would invite you places. They would let you sit in. But doesn't it seem like now, I mean, that was the blues world to me. That was what I came up in. But doesn't it seem today now that the industry isn't really like that anymore?
It's not. It's very categorized. It's very it's very themed. It's very well, it just, physical product is almost something that's not even around. I mean, being excited to buy an album when I was a kid, to go to the record store, to actually hold something that you wanted to hear, you know, and you didn't have to see it before you heard it. You heard it before you saw it, or, you know, it was just a different way. And, you know, it's hard to even think that, you know, all the vinyl, all the record stores disappeared, you know. It's, you know, and I was right on the cusp of watching all that happen, watching all the labels conglomerate. And, you know, I have, you know, well, all the big labels were there when I was shopping. I did demos for all of them. And, you know, I have all these, hey, this is great. It was a great run. You know, we produce something like Capitol. We record something for RCA, Elektra, you know, all these, you know. But, you know, we're going with this band named Garbage. So it's like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh man, all right, next. And so I think that, you know, playing and not looking back, just taking no prisoners and being able to play, you know, 8 days a week, if you will, just nonstop, anywhere, everywhere, all the time. You know, if I smelled chicken wings one more time when I was playing, I'd probably lose my mind, you know. But once, you know, coming from playing on the street corners to coffee shops and bars, and then moving on to festivals and theaters and festivals and tours, and from, you know, driving a van to having tour buses, you know, it's a ride that really, the mileage, you know, the way that we traveled even then was it's different than it is now. Like I said, I was on the cusp of a lot of that. I traveled all of Europe, 3 month tour, heavy tour, before the EU. And that means border crossings, border checks, different currencies, you know, it's different SIM cards for every country. It was just a different thing. The next time I went, where the buses are driving right through the borders, it was almost freaky. Like we're in the United States. And it's the wildest thing, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're just having one currency there, you know, even though it was miserable changeover for everybody, but it was convenient, you know, to not, I called them bling blongs, you know, because once you leave the country, you got a pocket full of bling blongs, you know. Thomas Cook, here I come, you know.
But nowadays, doesn't it feel like, because I know there's a lot of bands that either are not touring anymore or have really cut back simply because of how difficult and costly it is today. In that, you know, I mean, do you feel that same pinch And if so, I mean, is there something different that you do now, or you just keep pushing on?
Well, there's one thing I never did, and I don't think I'll ever do. And that was, which a lot of artists do. I'm not talking about the mainstream, music. When it comes to traveling musicians that we're talking about, guitarists and bands, sometimes it just doesn't matter, or they're adaptable, they can do it. But I always believed in, having the Jimi Hendrix and the experience, and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, or Janis and the Holding Company. I wanted to have like my band be my band for the duration, like the family aspect of it. But when it comes to the expense of touring, there's one thing I never even considered, and that was having a pickup band overseas and just fly myself, which is way cost effective for people that can do that. And study my music. We rehearse a few days, and then I just take these guys on the road. And but it, I always fly my guys with me, and when it comes to staying on the subject of expensive, there are expenses, and it does take a big bite out of it. And but it's always been something that I was glad and was worth every dime for me to have my boys with me, and to present myself as a band, and that's personified. And that's something that really stayed consistently expensive for me, and it never really bothered me, but it does get expensive now. There's so many reasons these days why I could see traveling people being hesitant to do so, but there's been a lot of trying times in travel, and you don't want to get stuck somewhere. You don't want something bad to happen, or but if you just think about the music, you gotta spend money to make money. And when it comes to touring, if I can get to the stages and I can get from show to show, absolutely, I'm on the road. It has not affected my thought process of touring in the future or soon.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, because like I
Yeah.
say, there are people that have made the decision to either stop or cut back or whatever. I tell you what,
Sure.
it's really commendable that you keep your guys with you and that you do those shows with your guys, because there are a lot of people that, try to save the money or whatever and cut those corners like that. But
Right.
I think it's really cool that you keep your guys on, because that says a lot about your character when it comes to the guys that support you in that. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I've seen a lot, and I've seen a lot of people. It's hard to for me, it's just not my thing. I would have no peace of mind. I get freedom with having musical conversation with the ones that I have with me on stage, and my band, like I said, the family side of it, it's three equal guys up there, man. There's no egos, no attitudes, just making music and living the dream,
That's cool.
Sorry.
So the new
Go
album comes
there.
out on the 13th. You've
Yes,
got
sir.
the on October 13th, and you've got the single out right now. Is there another single coming out in September, or is it just the album in?
I think I might drop another single. Might be coming out. Another single might be coming out. Because we got another month and a half till the album comes out, and I'm getting itchy. So that's the album. Also, is as all my albums have been, is being re released on colored vinyl. Big vinyl fan, by the way.
Yeah.
I really do think The honesty in vinyl is exactly the way I record, you know, just straight to 2-inch tape and no tricks and computers, you know. I just like to keep it real and keep the energy there, because the studio, as you know, it is a tool that can really work with you, but can also just iron out, put on the funk reducer and the groove eraser, you know, and you can lose the magic and sterilize it, you know, and you really want to capture what the band's about. And we're very much, I'm very much about being a live act, because never play the same song the same way twice, you know, capture the song. And that's going to stand forever as the recorded version. And then from there, it's never the same song. You know, it is the same song, but it's how I sang it that night.
Yeah.
You know, play it right. So that's the freedom within the music is cool. And when you're, and just to tap on one thing you were saying, since I'm going, being nostalgic a little bit. Yeah, you're right. With the attitudes about being able to, things were just cooler back then, you know, like, it's not so long ago, man, you know, really, but you know, you could go to the Fillmore and you could see, you know, BB King and the Doors in the same venue, you know, the same night, you know, opening for One Another. And that's the way it was. Now everything needs to be this kind of festival or that kind of festival. And to me, it's about the music. And it's all in there, man. It's a gumbo, and it should, you know, should be holding hands with a lot more than it is today. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you want, you know, going to a jazz festival, you know, you don't invite AC/DC to the coffee shop, though that would be awesome. But yeah. You know, it's just, you know, but within the boundaries, it's just the limitless possibilities of, you know, great bands playing together. It should be. Should be. I wish it was a little bit more like it was, you know.
Yeah, that would be really nice. That's for sure. And I appreciate hearing the fact that, you know, like you said, you recorded the 2-inch tape and everything comes out on vinyl. You know, I mean, everybody knows that 2-inch tape is, you know, I mean, it's an incredible way to record. I mean, the sound is just amazing in comparison. You know,
yeah,
I know a lot of people love digital. I personally, I'm like you. I like vinyl myself.
Yeah.
You know, I think it sounds much better and stuff.
I mean, it's a real, really, really. It's just it just can't be touched. I mean, it's the depth there, the space that it has, and it's the overall. It's the closest to the magic that you hear when it's through the system. On that tape, on that 5-inch tape, and you're listening to all that space that's in there, the depth is there. I mean, it's not compressed like it is on, you know, CD. I mean, music sounds great on CDs, but I'm partial. I love them both, but I mean, the format, you know, I think we could have done without 8 tracks altogether, but 9-track recordings, just 8-track tapes.
Right.
You know, with the big click right in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
I mean, who thought that one up?
Yeah. I used to have it, so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was
I mean,
for a while.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That was it. That was like laser discs.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, it's a big CD.
Exactly.
I was talking to a young kid, my friend's nephew. And I was like, oh, yeah, I was explaining something. He asked a question. It was relevant to what I said. And I said, well, all you have to do is just record on a cassette. And then you can put that on in the background and you can play your guitar over it. I mean, you practice over yourself, you know. And he goes, oh, what's a cassette? And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, man, I guess I'm getting up there a little bit.
Yeah. Those have been gone for a while and stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, Aaron, it was really cool chatting with you, man. I wish you the best with your release.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that, man. And it's an honor to chat with you. I know you've talked to a lot of cats, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get through the Chicago region. I can
come
out and see you play. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I like that. It's been too long. It's been way too long. I think of the city and I think about a lot of different stuff all at once, and that's a good thing. So too many great memories there. That's where we recorded the first album, Treat Me Right, with Dick Sherman.
I'll
And
be darned, really. Wow. Yeah, that's really cool. Again, man, thank you so much. I'll let you know when it's going to air, and I appreciate your time and best of luck,
Don't
my
be a
friend.
stranger. Don't be a stranger, man. Let's stay in touch, okay?
Will do. All right, man.
All right. You be
Take
cool, man.
care.
I'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right, bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Eric Sardinas right here on Guitar Talk. I want to thank Eric so much for making this happen and being a part of this episode. Make sure you get a copy of Midnight Junction. It's a great album. Make sure you support him. You know, if he's coming to your town, go see him, buy some merchandise. You know, this is what, you know, guys like him survive on. I mean, that's their living, right? You might own a grocery store. You need people to come in and buy eggs. Well, Eric is a touring musician and he needs people to come check him out. So do that. Yeah, do that. You know, we have just an amazing lineup coming up over the course of 2024. We've got some great things going on. You know, yesterday I sat down with John Five for an upcoming interview. Not long ago, I sat down with Mick Mars, formerly of Motley Crue. He's going to be on the program. We've just got so much really cool stuff. And also to next month, about half of February, we're going to devote 100% to the Illinois Guitar and Gear Expo. We've got Jeff Smith from Newman Guitars. We've got Todd from Greenville Pickups. We've got Greg from Go Pedal Boards. We've got Sloan Amplifiers going to be with us. And then we've got Awesome Guitars, I think it is, or Awesome Music Incorporated. They've got some really cool electronics for guitars that you're going to want to check out. It's going to be really cool. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you next Wednesday because that's what we do, right? Wednesday, 7 p.m. across all streaming platforms. You know what? Make sure that you're following, liking, and sharing everything that we do. We really appreciate it. Go to our Facebook page, our TikTok page, and all that kind of stuff, and just get involved, man. Let me know who you want on the show. Let me know your thoughts of what's going on. And until then, I will see you next week right here in my studio. That's what I do. I mean, what else am I gonna do? You know, I can't work on cars anymore. Never really did. See you around.